Everyone, we're going to be turning today to a different book of the Bible than Revelation. We'll take a short break from the book of Revelation so that we can look at the subject of forgiveness. Now, I'm preaching on the subject of forgiveness today at the request of someone in our church. And I want to encourage you, if you do have a subject that you would like me to preach on, you can just let me know, and I'd be glad to do that. And today we are very, very fortunate to have such a great parable from Jesus, which is known as the prodigal son and the return of the prodigal son. And so we're going to look at that story together that we have just heard in the scripture reading today. So if you want to open your Bibles to that section in Luke chapter 15 from verse 11, we'll take a look at this wonderful and meaningful story together. As you know, the story starts out with a son going to his father and saying to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided the property between them, meaning his brother and himself. And not many days later, the younger son takes all that he has, and he took a journey into a far country, right? And there he squandered all of his property, all of his money, in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine comes, and it strikes that country, and he began to be in need. And so he goes and he hires himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. Now, if this is a Jewish young person, and we suppose that it is, then that would be a really, really big insult, because there are laws against eating pork and things of that nature. And so this is a tremendous insult for this young man to have to do something like that. He was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. And so he was destitute. He was so hungry and starving for food. And so he came to himself, it says. When he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? And I'll arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he rose and came to his father. But when he was a far way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, and now he's alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. And so during the celebration, we have this interesting part of the story come in where the older son was in the field. And as he came in after work and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he's thinking to himself, what is going on? And he called one of the servants and asked them what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But the brother was angry and refused to go in. His father came out to him and entreated him. But he answered his father and said, look, these many years I have served you and I've never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, and you killed the fatted calf for him, and he said to him, son, you're always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. Just a tremendously powerful drama that was unfolding here, filled with all kinds of meaning. Well, this story has meant a lot to many different people, and I would like to introduce two people to you today who were touched by this story and reflected it in their work. One of them was an author named Henry Nguyen, a very, very passionate Christian who has learned many, many lessons from the Bible and in his life. And he expounds on this story in a really, really wonderful way. If you have a chance, you can get a copy of his book and read it. It's just really powerful. Well, in that book, he also mentions another person, and that was Rembrandt, the famous Flemish painter. And Rembrandt was touched and moved by the prodigal son also. And he painted in his later life, right before he died, he painted a very, very famous painting of the prodigal son coming back to the father and the whole scene. And I want to just share that with you to take a look at, and then also share some of the ideas that Mr. Nguyen has in his book in reflecting on this painting. You can see here that the younger son is bowed before his father on his knees, and his father is leaning down and has his hands on his shoulder. And to the right, you can see there is a tall figure there, and that would be the brother. And he's representing someone who is standing upright and stiffly looking down on his younger brother. And in the background, you can see some other people there that are helped actually to give the painting perspective, but also to give the idea that someone is watching this to see what is unfolding before them. There's a lot more we can say about this, but I'd like for now to just focus in on the father and the son just a little bit more, and I'm going to show you a little bit closer view of that. You can see, and I will describe some of the things that we can see here using Henry Nguyen's help to do so. First, he says the painting by Rembrandt is very moving and helpful. It shows the father with his hands on the younger son's shoulders. The light is brought out in the paint to focus on the hands of the father. There is mercy and forgiveness, reconciliation and healing together. One of the hands is painted as a father's hand, more masculine. The other hand is a more feminine hand, that of a mother. You can see, maybe if you glance at that, you can see a little bit difference in the depth and the muscularity of the hand on the right, and then on the left you see one that is a little bit more feminine, right? Therefore, the father has both fatherly and motherly attributes to the way he treats the son. The son is on his knees before the father. He has no hair, which means that he is destitute and poor, an outcast without any glory. His clothes are like undergarments, plain, depicting the poverty, both financial and spiritual. His one foot is bare. Let me show you that again. You can see here, right? And without the sandal beside it. And the other foot has the sandal half on his foot, mostly worn out, which also shows his poverty, weariness, and hardship experienced during this time away from home. The father, in comparison, can show here the father. Sorry about that. Let me just try to do this right. The father is, in comparison, has clothing in strong colors. You can see that, right? And his cape is one that exhibits a sense of wrapping itself around the sun. The older brother stands rigidly, unemotionally to the side, unmoved by the return of his brother. He stands there with anger, hurt, and resentment. The painting draws us into the moment and asks us to find ourselves among the characters. But the light of Rembrandt's sensitive painting draws the viewer to the image of the father most. He is full of compassion, mercy, and love. Let me just remove that for now. And we'll return to the story without the painting. We could take a look at that more later. I hope that you really got as much from that as I have. It's a beautiful painting and very moving. So Henry Nguyen, like I said, has written a book on the subject of the prodigal son. And he states three traits of the compassionate father that we have seen here to help us to learn and imitate him in our own lives. First of all, the trait of grief. The father grieves. He is heartbroken over the sins of his youngest son, but also his older son, as we've heard in this story. The younger son really insults the father terribly, and some fathers would never have accepted him back. But the father's grief is shown in the way that he has joy in his heart and runs to meet the son when he sees him in the distance and embraces him, right? Likewise, for the elder son, it's shown in the fact that he tells him, my son was, your brother was dead, but now he's alive. He was lost, but now is found, right? And so that encapsulates his grief and his feeling of woe that his son could possibly actually be dead. And you can imagine the joy when he sees him coming in the distance, coming home, and how that father must have looked out on the horizon to see if that would be the day that his younger son would return. And so grief also for us is very important in our own lives, not because the grief itself is something that we desire, but it teaches us things. And the grief, I believe, and I think that Henry Nguyen would agree, is a form of prayer. It results in prayers that we call out to God, that we call out to God for the person with whom we have a difference, is to be brought home, is coming home, that we are grieving over what has occurred, the hurt that has occurred between us, and our grief turns toward God in prayer, calling out for a homecoming with that person. Jesus, of course, grieved over Jerusalem, right? He grieved over the people, his own people, who were turning on him as well. And so grief is a trait of the compassionate father who desires and shows his heartfelt feelings for those who are estranged from him. And we need to also understand that as Christians ourselves. The second trait is forgiveness. And of course, that is the theme for today. Forgiveness has been defined this way: to give up desire or power to punish. To give up desire or power to punish. I think that really encapsulates it well. To forgive. That word give is in there. But to give up desire or power to punish someone. God's forgiveness is unconditional. It's unconditional. It doesn't have any strings attached. It comes from a heart that does not demand anything for itself. A heart that is completely empty of self-seeking. And so that describes a heart of forgiveness, someone who is ready to make amends, to forget what has happened, to give up the idea of holding something against someone else. Henry Nguyen says this in his important book: grief allows me to see beyond my wall and realize the immense suffering that results from human lostness. It opens my heart to a genuine solidarity with my fellow humans. Forgiveness is the way to step over the wall and welcome others into my heart without expecting anything in return. I think that that's so well put. You can reread the book and gain so much from that book that he has written with this wisdom. You can tell that he has lived through some of these things. And so that would be forgiveness. The third trait of a compassionate father that we want to learn is generosity. The father gives his son everything he asks before he departs. He gives him his property, his part of the property. He showers him with gifts on his return. To his elder son, he says, "All I have is yours." The younger son is rewarded with a new robe, a new ring, and a sandals, and given a sumptuous welcome home dinner. And the older brother is lovingly encouraged to come and to join them when he comes home and hears what is going on. Henry Nguyen again says this: true generosity is acting on the truth, not the feeling that those I am asked to forgive are kinfolk or family and belong to my family. Generosity creates the family it believes in. And so we can see that really vividly in this whole time. And I really believe this spoke to me the most this week, everyone, when I read that about the generosity. I think that I have forgiven people in my own life. I have forgiven them for doing something wrong against me. But I keep my distance. And I say to myself, I don't really have to spend any time with them. I don't really have to, you know, engage with any kind of conversation anymore. We're different. You know, we obviously don't get along and things like that. But when I read this, and it was pointed out by Henry Nguyen, I could see the error of my ways. And I could see it by his pointing to Jesus and the way that he rewarded and engaged with generosity in the life of his son, younger son, when he came home. Even though in the minds of many people at that time, or of all the people actually, would have said, you don't have to do anything for him. He doesn't deserve it. He's a terrible son. How could he ever be forgiven? And the father says, no, I'm going to forgive him. Not only that, but I'm going to be generous to him. I'm going to give him a new robe so that he doesn't have to wear underwear anymore. I'm going to give him a ring for his finger to give him a sense of belonging to me and that he's of great worth to me and he belongs to me, right? He's my son. And then also I'm going to give him new sandals because he's obviously worn out all of his sandals and his feet are so worn. And I could see the hurt that is going. And so he restores him completely that way. And then he throws a great party for him on top of that and shows everyone that his joy in his son returning is much more important than anything that his son could have done to him. And so he shares that joy with everyone. And he always also shows it with his older son, even when the older son is scolding his father for having given the younger son something that he felt that he never received. And so you see, the father is wise in his grief and in his forgiveness and his generosity towards both the younger son and the older son. He says, please come in and join in the party. When I read that, I also thought of myself sometimes, you know, where in life where perhaps you've had the same kind of an experience where you come into a situation and you feel wronged by what you see going on in front of you. You feel almost like you're coming upon some kind of an unfair situation where you should have been given something. You should have received something, right? You're not happy when people are happy. Have you ever felt like that? You feel like, I'm not going to be happy here. I'm just going to have a scowl on my face. I'm just going to hold these things inside. I'm not going to participate in this. This is not fair. And so you hold on to those kind of feelings. But Jesus is teaching us that that doesn't belong to forgiveness. What forgiveness really entails is a sense of giving up the power to punish someone, and not only that, but extending generosity and overcoming all those feelings of resentment in your heart and saying, I am going to be Christ-like here. I am going to be like the Father in heaven. I am going to reflect what they do. And through their power, friends, we can do that. Well, in music, there is a term that refers to a melody or a chord being unresolved. I don't know if you've ever come upon that in your music making, but it's a chord or a melody that is unresolved. And let me give you an example using a simple scale to show what I'm talking about. If I sing a scale for you, it's going to be like la 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 la. La 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 la. Right? It's complete. It has a feeling of a beginning, starting at home, going up to the top and an octave higher. We repeat the tonic note, only an octave higher. Da, da, da. And so it gives a feeling of fulfillment and of joy and of coming home, right? And returning home. Well, if you sing something that is unresolved, and we'll sing the scale with an unresolved feeling to it, it would go like this. La, 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 la. Wait. La, 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 la. Where's the last note? Right? It's hanging there. We're hanging in midair and we're not resolving and we're not reaching home yet. And, you know, I was thinking about it, and that's exactly what happens when we're in relationships where we're holding on to that power to punish someone, where we're not forgiving, where we are not going to be generous, where we are going to say, life is going to be controlled by me, and this relationship that I have with this other person is going to be an unresolved melody. And so both that person and I suffer for it. And then I really think that that's what Jesus is trying to teach us here, right? Jesus has provided us with an answer to those unresolved broken relationships. First, with the Father in heaven, who with grief waits for his rebellious children to return. And when they do, he embraces them with joy. This is true forgiveness. But he does not stop there. He gives to them generously, lavishing them with fresh new robes, fine jewelry and shoes for their feet. He orders the best food to be prepared. He forgives them with love and lavishes them with generosity. Jesus is teaching us to do the same, to imitate the compassionate Father Let us become grieving fathers who desire for those who have wandered away to return, praying for them to return so that we can forgive them and embrace them and not stop there, but lavish them with generosity. We do the same for them as the Father in heaven has done for us. The same one, the same thing that the Father in the prodigal son story has done. And when we do, we direct the eyes of others like paint in the Rembrandt painting on our compassionate Father in heaven. Is your melody unresolved? Is it going, Well, come home to the Father and let your melody be complete. Why would we ever want it any other way, right? Through Jesus Christ, we can do that. Let your melody ring joyfully. Is your melody unresolved? Be the Father and pray for the one who's hurt you, that they will come home and be embraced by your hands on their shoulders, blessed by your generosity. In both cases, the Father in heaven makes your melody complete. It's no longer unresolved. Your melody is complete, and you have come home. Amen.